The hailing frequencies are open because this is GHO Extra, and I'm Jason Inman, and I did that sound effect specifically because I knew we kidnapped our guest from Geek History Lesson, Tim Sheridan, writer of Alan Scott Green Lantern, writer of Flashpoint Beyond, writer of so many good stuff, the animated Batman The Long Halloween. How do you not know who he is?
Practically our neighbor, so we just kidnapped him, brought him here, and said we're doing this again.
He doesn't know that we introduced GHO Extra with a Star Trek sound effect, and I knew that would give him pleasure. Oh, Ashley Robbins is here, by the way, too.
Hi.
So Tim, thank you for joining us. You had no choice in the matter.
First of all, why am I not in the studio with you? if we live this close to each
it's,
other.
To be honest with you, because it's easier to record virtually now. Totally. I hate to say it, totally but it's so easier because nobody has to leave their homes.
It made my life much easier because I am under multiple deadlines, as I always am. And so I'm going to get right back to work after this.
Will you tell us what those deadlines are?
I mean, sure. I mean, I still owe pages on issue 4 of Alan Scott, The Green Lantern, ooh, which is, I think, coming out in February. I think issue 4 is February. Did I get that right? 1 October, November, December. January. January. See, I can't do math.
Even worse.
This might be math. A perfect way to get to you know, let our listeners in under the curtain here a little bit.
Yeah.
When did you write? Ashley, see, Ashley's she wants to chime in on the question with
her alarm. Her alarm is
can you say it into my phone, please?
No,
it's your snooze alarm. So, you've been, like, snoozing over there.
When did you write issue 1? How long ago did you write issue 1? Because issue 1 hit in October.
Yep.
So when did you write the script to issue 1? The original script. I'm not the
I mean, well, let me tell you about the process a little bit. So, you know, the first draft of the issue 1 script was probably in, I want to say March or April, maybe. And right now it's what? November. But I could absolutely be making that up. I could look it up while we're talking. I could look it up and see.
He wrote it last week, folks.
It's possible that it wasn't for a couple months after.
Here's
that.
The real secret. Nobody wrote anything. And Kian didn't draw anything. Somehow,
I think we talked about it in July.
Somehow,
or
this issue appeared in. This is actually a curse. This is the curse of Tim Sheridan. Somehow, it appeared
this
in comic book stores.
This is the curse of Alan Scott's continuity and the timeline.
And
it's a ghost.
Tim was just the smartest man to take the credit.
Yeah.
See?
That's right. He got there first. That's right. That's exactly the truth. No, I mean, so the thing is, like, issue 1, like, we needed to have a script ready to go early enough that we were putting a whole new team together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Ian and I had never worked together. We wanted to have we were lucky enough to have a lot of lead time. So, so it was important, you know, and for Andrew Marino, our editor, that we, you know, had work product ready to go for the rest of the team to work with, which was great. But there was another year before that of work on this story. You know, before the actual issue 1 script, first draft of the script came out, and there's probably 4 or 5 drafts ultimately by the end,
including lettering drafts.
Yeah, including a lettering draft, which that would include. I think the lettering draft was issue was revision 4 on issue 1.
Not bad.
But there was an outline. There was a very detailed outline before that, and before that there was a phone conversation where Jeff Johns called me and said, I think you should write an Alan Scott miniseries in the 1940s as a, you know, he's a closeted gay hero. We haven't seen that story. And I think you probably have, you know, you probably have some stuff you want to say with that. Do you? And I said, no, I'm scared and I won't do it. I really was a little scared. Because it's probably the most personal thing I've ever written. And, there was so much, there was something so exciting about doing Alan Scott because he came out of the closet, you know, but hasn't had a series. He hasn't really had his own, he's had a couple of pages, you know, here and there. Mm-hmm. So we haven't really gotten to get in deep on who he is and who he, based on what we now know about him, that he was living as a closeted gay man. you know, there was this idea of the Golden Age Red Lantern character, his arch nemesis that had been removed from the timeline and reinserted back into the timeline, which was just a really cool character and a fun sci-fi thing, but also could reveal a lot about the character of the Green Lantern in addition to Alan Scott. And then, you know, like I said, it's just, there's a lot of personal stuff I wanted to sort of address, which, you know, one of the great things about this book for me has been, I mean, it's a tragedy, but it's a tragedy, but it's been a great learning experience for me, has been in talking about sort of the oppression of what it meant to be someone who was queer in the 1930s and 40s. The thing that surprised me the most is how much of it is still alive today, mm-hmm. how much of that stuff is still around. And therefore the great surprise for me was how much we can learn from stories like, you know, people like Alan Scott. So having an opportunity to be one of the voices, getting to tell those stories, you know, is a joy for me. So it took me a long time to kind of figure out what angles on that did I want to address, and also still make this a really fun superhero story. So that was the process. It's been going on for a year and a half or something like that, but we've been actively scripting and drawing the thing since, you know, this summer. I think we've managed to destroy any of the lead time that we had.
Like,
we
had in comics, never.
That happens in every industry.
We had so much lead time, but I wouldn't trade it. You know why? Because Kian, every issue, Kian Tormey is upping the ante. Mm-hmm. I think his work from the, we did a 6-page on-ramp story, which I actually wrote before issue one, which was in DC Pride through the years. And that story, you go back and you look at that, then you look at issue one, you look at issue two, and I'm looking at issue three, and Kian just keeps adding more and more and growing this world and these characters, and the acting is getting sharper and more intense and complex as the story gets more complex. And so I love that the amount of time we're taking is allowing him to be able to do that. It's allowing that, which then feeds me, mm-hmm. when I'm scripting issue four, issue five, to go back in now that I know what we can get away with and what Kian, you know, can pull off. It changes sort of how I approach the story, which is why I don't like just writing the whole thing and then sending it off and letting it go become.
No, it's a true collaboration.
That's the TV writer in you too, right? Like we were talking about on the main episode, that's like being in collaboration, being mm-hmm. active with all aspects of the team.
Yeah. Well, I haven't really had that a lot in TV either. I mean, most of the time I'm a writer and I write something and you're the first point in the process. You write it, you hand it off, and then you leave in animation, mm-hmm. Particularly. And I'm working on another book right now where I think, you know, I'm moving slowly on it, but I think the reason is because they want me to just deliver all the issues, but we hadn't gotten any pencils back. I hadn't seen anything yet. I'd never worked with the artist before. And so I'm like, I don't want to keep writing. I'm writing some important climactic stuff here, and I want to see
how they work, what
I want to get into the mind of the artist, mm-hmm. a little bit, the way that they get to get inside my mind. And I think that's where these things just sort of get better through process. So
can you tell us what that is that you're writing, or is that a secret right now?
I can't talk about it.
That's fine.
No,
that's
fine. Not yet.
Well, that's why we know you're a good writer, because I always do this thing on my books. I always, when I first start with a new artist, I'm always like, is there something you hate drawing? Because if so, I'm not going to put it in a book. But then I always ask them the question too, where I'm like, is there something? So I've asked this question to every artist I've worked with. I have yet to get the yes on this. And I always say, is there something you really want to draw? Like dragons? And nobody has taken me up on dragons yet. I'm trying to get a dragon in one of my books. Hasn't happened. But it's a perfect symbiosis. So I'm going to throw a curveball at you, Tim, here.
I'm not good at sports. Just FYI.
Okay. I'm going to give you a left-hand turn. That's on my desk. Ashley just held up a baseball for our audio listeners.
Oh, so, yeah. For anyone listening.
That meant nothing. Any artist alive today, who would be your dream collaborator? You can pick any.
Throw that out there.
What does that
I
mean?
I can't pick one because Nenon's going to look
at like three. Then pick three.
Dream collaborators. I mean, it just depends on the project too. I don't know.
Okay, so for your Batman book, because we know that your origins are in Batman, who is alive?
Again, DC says money.
You don't get Gil Kane.
We can get Frank Miller on the line if you want, Frank, or Greg Capullo, or
are we saying only alive, not living or dead?
Well, let's go dead. If you want to bring resurrection into this, let's go.
I mean.
I do.
Our Lord and Savior Tim Sale is, I think, definitely swirling in the.
That was who I was going to say. Yeah. Certainly, if I'm doing Batman, I want to work with Tim Sale. When I was doing Titans, I kept trying to come up with ways to get George Perez, get him to do a cover or something.
The best hair in comics.
He was dealing with a lot of stuff. We ended up getting to put a little sort of tribute into Titans Academy at the end of the story to George. So, you know, those are people that I absolutely would want to work with. I mean, you know, but I'm also blown away by stuff that, you know, I'm crazy about Jim Lee. I'm crazy about Jorge Jimenez.
Yeah.
You know, I'm crazy about Mitch Gerrards. I don't know if I don't know if I say his name right.
That is right. That is correct.
He's just Mitch to me. So yeah, I don't know. You know, he did covers for Flashpoint Beyond though. So technically I guess I did do something with him. You know, I mean, there's so many that I, you know, and then there are people, there's a guy who doesn't really do superhero comics. He does horror comics, and he just did a series with my friend, David Boer. They did a series called Specs. It's Chris Sheehan.
Yes.
And I love Chris Sheehan's work. And there's all kind of, like, it's the kind of work that makes me go, oh, wait, I think I have a story for that matches kind of his style and what he does. And so, yeah.
We've done a lot of deep comic chat, but I love asking people this. And at the time of this recording, Tim and I are technically striking, but Tim, what are some things that you're just like enjoying right now?
Yeah, what's out there?
What's inspiring you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny because I am technically still a member of the Screen Actors Guild from my old days of being a successless actor in Hollywood. I did some commercials. It got me into SAG. But
Google.
Are they online? Are they online?
Oh yeah, they're out there.
What was one of the brands?
I'll tell you the biggest one. Well, it was the smallest one I ever did, in that it was the smallest payday I ever did. But the coolest one was I did a commercial with David Beckham, and it was me and David Beckham, and it was for Sharpie because he had just moved to America and had just joined the Galaxy. He took on these like endorsement deals, and he did a commercial for Sharpie. I don't know. I haven't watched it.
Was it set in a coffee shop?
No, it was in the. It takes place in multiple locations. I'm in the grocery store, and he is signing my bottle of orange juice.
Oh, there it, look, we just found it.
I will put this, like, are you in an orange hat?
It's absurd. I'm in an orange hat.
Or maybe brown, yeah.
And you blink and you'll miss me, but it was fun because
you're in the commercial quite a bit, actually, but your back is to the camera, sort of. Oh, there you are. Oh, yeah.
The audition tape is better than what ended
you
up
look
in
like
the commercial.
You look like you're petrified of him on this still ring. Yeah, Jason.
It was supposed to be like, he won't give me back my marker.
Yeah.
And I'm like, suddenly he's demystified for me and I'm annoyed by him.
Yeah.
Like, give me back. And the audition was really fun.
Because he was deeply annoying in real life. So you didn't have to.
No, not at all. No, but I faked chewing a piece of gum. The way Barbara Streisand famously got her first job. I faked that I was chewing gum in the audition on tape. And I think it gave an air to, you know, the guy to be like sort of annoyed. And he's like, you know, annoyed by David Beckham. You can't see what I'm doing. I'm acting. It's really good. but then on the day, I had a real piece of gum in my mouth. And the director, when we started, he's like, well, do you have gum in your mouth? Take it out. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, it's just in the audition. And he's like, I don't care about gum, you know?
This is a Sharpie commercial.
Comport yourself like a professional.
That was the most that anybody had ever spoken to me on the set that day, except David Beckham, who was delightful.
We
just, both of us were kind of like, I don't know what I'm doing. Let's just do this. And he was really, really sweet. And it was a lot of fun. So anyway, I did those things. And so your question was about
what am
I into right now? And I can't wait to tell you what I just watched last night that I am so into. I'm sure, Matt, it's not comic book related, but it is, which is a new show on Showtime, but you can catch it on Paramount Plus, called Fellow Travelers.
Okay.
Starring Matt Bomer.
Oh, it's his
Jonathan
new, yes!
Bailey.
I've seen the advertisements.
It's a travesty they never played Nightwing.
Let me tell you something. It is so part and parcel with the Alan Scott book that I'm doing right now. There are so many connections and similarities emotionally of what's happening. And that story takes place about 10 years after my story takes place. But it is just thematically. So, in fact, I don't know if I'm still writing Alan Scott. So I think I'm going to stop watching the show.
Until you're done. Yeah.
And it was the same thing with I'm gonna hold up a prop. My comic book guy recommended, after issue one came out, recommended this book by Matthias Lehmann called Parallel, which is also thematically very similar, takes place in a similar time period as Alan Scott. So I started reading that, and then I was like, oh, no, I got to put it down because I'm not done yet. And I don't want to be influenced by the way other writers are attacking this thing. So, but watch that show. And I think watch that show if you're reading Alan Scott, it's going to just add extra layers for you. I think it gives you a really beautiful, up close, intimate portrait for the kind of difficulties, the challenges, the anguish, the things that someone like Alan is going through in his life and in our book. So.
Well, that's a great suggestion. That series does look really good. Tim, thank you so much for joining us here on GHL Extra. Real quickly, give our patron listeners, again, where they can find you on the social medias in case they want to follow you. And again, hound you about Rex the Wonder Dog.
Yeah, Streak or Rex. We'll do a poll. Which do you want it to be Streak or
yeah.
Rex?
You could set the definitive. You could be like, nope, he is Streak or he is Rex.
It's funny.
Or make up a new name. What if it's Tim the Wonder Dog?
What if he's Sebastian the Wonder Dog?
Or I'm just going to, Brian the Wonder Dog.
It is, I know we're trying to wrap up, but since we are talking about canonizing names a certain way, that is a thing that we did with Alan, which was there was this confusing thing in his history where sometimes he was called Alan Wellington Scott and sometimes he was Alan Ladd Scott. And you'll see in our story, kind of try to just make a little bit of sense out of that. Ladd isn't actually his middle name. It's the name of his boyfriend who died in the military, who died when they were in the Army Corps of Engineers. And he adds that name to his own when he, gets out of the military, back out into the world. So it looks like a middle name. It's Alan Ladd Scott, but his real name is Alan Wellington Scott, right? Anyway, that's the kind of stuff that I love doing and having fun with and trying to explain and make sense out of, like Streak or Rex, which we will figure out which one it's going to be. You can find me, you can link to me anywhere off of timsheridan.com and on socials. Sometimes I'm I Love Tim Sheridan, which is a great
handle. Social media handle.
And sometimes it's I Am Tim Sheridan because they didn't have enough characters for I Love Tim Sheridan.
Yeah. And also hashtag I Love Alan Scott.
There you go.
Yeah, hashtag I Love Alan Scott.
Well, listeners, thank you so much for your support. Thank you, Tim, for joining us. Thank you, Ashley, for joining us as well. You didn't have any
choice.
You're
welcome.
And just to give Tim one last smile on the camera, if you're watching the video of this later, here is, I'm sorry, the Star Trek sound effect that closes out our podcast sometimes.
Warning, self-destruct sequence has been initiated.
Can you hear it? Tim, can you hear that sound effect at all?
I can hear it. But my question is, does the first officer concur?
1A, 2B, 3C. Yes.
No, that's not right, is it?
That is the, by the way, that is one, the self-destruct
one A,
code.
1A, 2B.
3C?
It's 3C, right?
One, now one there's a furious B, Scotty, right?
Is Enterprise that? Self-destruct code.
Scotty's is 1A, 2B, I think.
The final code is code 000 destruct 0.
Yeah,
I know that one.
But yes, I just remember there's a gag where they do that exact same self-destruct yes. sequence in Futurama and Bender blows up.
Yes.
And he's like, thanks a lot, guys. So,
oh, man. We're going to have to do a come have me back and we'll talk about Star Trek destruct sequences.
We will. All right.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.